In the translation, it says, the man who is without desire, without faith, knows the uncreated, is ungrateful. But of course, without faith, without desire is wrong. It really means the man who has fake faith, or cheating faith, knows the uncreated, cuts off rebirth. But the man who is without fake sadhu.
It's referring to the acceptance of sadhu,
means the person who does not just live by the other's word. Acceptance, not just live. It has to be for oneself to know. Otherwise, if somebody says that you have attained enlightenment. Sattva in Thai means not just believe by the other's word, not believe the other's word. One has to know for oneself. If someone said that, oh, you had attained enlightenment and you just believe, that is not believe the other's word. It has to be your own, just for yourself, who knows. It doesn't mean like no sattva at all.
So it's not the opposite of sadha. It doesn't mean no sadha.
It is sadha.
That has to be developed for oneself. Yes. So actually it's a good quality.
Yes, because it's all the quality of the enlightened one, I think.
So it doesn't mean rootless or baseless sadha or anything like that.
No. Because the other sentence is who knows Nibbana or who experienced Nibbana, who has enlightened. Like what you said, akatanyu. It does mean that, not katanyu, but it means because he experienced or enlightened by himself.
So actually this one sounds more like the third kind of sadha, the karavati, the one that is attained by the Aryan, that the one that is from experience. Karavati, so not Amulika.
No, I think it's saying that he's without the Amulika one.
Without the Amulika. Right. Because he has his own sadha.
It's Sariputta Thera Katha. This katha is Sariputta's katha.
Yes, so what the Venerable is saying is because it is his own sadha that has been developed, it means he is the one that doesn't have the Mulika, doesn't have the baseless sadha, because it is his own developed sadha. Just another point of clarification, after the morning session, Kun Metta was asking more about the Kaya Sankara, Vachi Sankara, Chitta Sankara, and why, for example, just the in and out breaths were mentioned in the first example, Vitaka Vichara in the second, and Vedanan Sanya in the third, because, for example, taking the Vedanan Sanya in the third, all the other Chitta seekers are there as well, so why it just mentioned Vedanan Sanya? Is it just as examples, or just because they are such important?
Only two are mentioned, but it doesn't mean that the others not included.
So the other is not Sankara.
They are, but when the two are mentioned, it does mean that the others are excluded.
So the other also Chitta Sankara.
Could we mention all, or just two is enough, like Neva Sanya, Na Sanya Yatana, or Asanya Sata? Just mention Sanya, but includes Chitta and Chitta Sikas. When there is the understanding about realities, one cannot think like that, only two, nothing more than that, see?
Back to Sati. And I was reading where you said that the names that are used, the words do not refer to the nama dhammas, the reality experiences. The name only bends towards the meaning. So I was thinking that in relation to sati, when you say that sati is aware of a characteristic of a reality, for example, visible object, and the characteristic would be that which can be seen, those words, that which can be seen, is not what Sati is aware of. Like, the reality is not those words. That is what I'm asking.
You mean the characteristic that is being aware of is something other than that?
That the words do not match the characteristic that Sati experiences. Mm-hmm. That they are only
pointers,
pointing to the experience.
So what is Sati aware of?
Sati is aware of a characteristic of a reality.
Mm-hmm. What characteristic?
Whatever the characteristic appears.
One. Yes, one by yeah. one.
But the word, I suppose what I'm checking with you is that when you say that the words, like the words that we use, like
a sense reality or a characteristic of one reality,
like that which can be seen.
Mm-hmm. Now.
But in reality, Sati, the experience is without those words.
Mm.
That's what I'm asking.
Yes.
Yes, like those words are... When we hear those words, we think, oh, that's what Sati does, but that's not really... It's different to that. That's what I'm...
Well, that's the best available description.
Yes, I appreciate that. But we are missing the point to think that that's, mm-hmm. describes the experience. That's what I'm trying to get at, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
The aim is not to figure out what those words mean, but to experience the reality.
But how can you know if no meaning in them?
Right. You have to have the words as pointers.
Yes, the words can help, but they don't substitute for the experience. That's what I'm trying to get. Yes.
It depends on the understanding when we use those words, how close the words are to representing the realities as well. Because for those who have a lot of developed wisdom, when they read or hear particular words like citta or cetasika, this very precise understanding of exactly what that dharma is that's represented by the words.
So hearing those words could be a condition for sati to arise.
To be aware of the reality.
Yeah. I have a related question. I think I remember reading that its function is not to be forgetful or something like that. How does that fit in with what we're talking about?
It does not forget the characteristic which appears that it's a reality. Forget?
Okay, so that's what being aware means, not being forgetful.
Not being forgetful
of
the characteristic or to be aware?
Not being forgetful of the reality. The characteristic of reality, if you like. You can only say is aware of the characteristic or is not forgetful of the characteristic, because it's the function of panya to know.
So when we talk about not being forgetful, how is that different to sanya?
Sanya remembers everything, but awareness sometimes arises and sometimes does not arise.
And one of the functions of sanya is to mark the object.
I actually had a question about sanya that I might raise now, and that was, if it remembers everything, does it remember concepts? It remembers concepts.
Each moment. Sanya remembers that it's human.
Yes, I remember us talking about that recognition that is based on sanya. In relation to intellectual understanding, as in intellectual understanding develops, it would seem that the concepts that are being dealt with change. I was wondering how sanya deals with, like, developed understanding compared to what it remembers about early understanding. Or is it all remembered?
Different citta, different sanya at a time.
And when it marks a characteristic of reality,
it just marks. It cannot be aware, but it marks.
And so the accumulated understanding, that is the function of panya, not of sanya. Like sanya, even though the level of understanding changes, Anya just continues to mark a different citta each time.
A different object each time, because the object of the citta or the sanya may be a citta, or it may be a rupa, or it may be a concept, so the object, whatever it is.
Does sanya play a role? Because every moment of understanding the characteristic of reality, there's also sanya that marks that characteristic. So does sanya have any role in the development of understanding?
What kind of sanya is now? Anatta sanya, not anatta sanya.
How does that work? I mean, with these sanya marking.
With panya, when there's panya, understanding reality, it's not sound. Sanya marks.
And does that sanya have any effect on later arising of panya?
Yeah. Otherwise, one has to start again.
Just getting back to awareness for a moment, I remember a simile that's used, something about a pumpkin bobbing around in the water. I think it's to describe the non-forgetfulness of sati, or the...
Forgetfulness or non-forgetfulness?
Well, the forgetfulness. But I know you're not all that keen on some of these similes, but it's a very graphic one.
Nothing alone is not the characteristic of awareness.
Apilapana.
Like now, floating along. Mm.
So just to clarify that, floating along with forgetfulness.
The forgetfulness floats along.
Actually, having Venerable Dhammananda here reminds me of something that you raised one other time you were here about the voice of another, Parato Gosa. And it just happens to be in a note that I had related to another question. I'd like to just ask about this related to Suttamaya Panya and Chintamaya Panya. So when we talk about Suttamaya Panya and Chintamaya Panya, we can talk at many levels, getting closer and closer to the absolute reality. So in terms of the absolute reality, Suttamaya Panya can refer just to the moment of hearing a sound, and Chintamaya Panya to the consideration of it. So when the texts refer to the voice of another as being an essential ingredient for developing understanding, are we just referring to Chintamaya Panya there? Chintamaya Panya, the consideration of the sounds that have heard that we call another?
What do you think about that?
Wouldn't the Yona Samanasikara be Chintamaya Panya? What do you think?
Excuse me. Now is Suttamaya Panya or Chintamaya Panya? Now.
Different moments, both.
If there is no hearing and then you think about it, consider, contemplate, that is, to me, Chintamaya Panya.
On that, we can say when there is Chintamaya Panya, there has to be Yoniso Manasikara.
What about Chintamaya Panya? Because it's also Panya,
yeah,
too.
Whereas Yoniso Manasikara may not be.
I'm sorry, can you explain Suttamaya Panya and Chintamaya Panya?
Now, Chintamaya Panya or Suttamaya Panya, we have to begin here now.
I'm not familiar with those terms.
Is there any hearing?
Yes.
Sutta means hearing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And panya, from hearing, is Suttamaya Panya. At this moment of listening, you get, you understand, that is Suttamaya Panya. But not now, later on, when you think about it, and you can contemplate, and panya grows more than just from hearing. Better or deeper, that is Chintamaya Panya.
Chintamaya Panya. So it's related to hearing.
Suttamaya Panya. Suttamaya Panya. Suttamaya means hearing. But Chintamaya without hearing, Panya can arise too.
Yes.
From contemplation, considering. It doesn't mean that it can arise only just at moment of hearing or from hearing only.
So Suttamaya Panya then is hearing now.
Is Panya.
Based on what has been heard. Okay. And Chintamaya Panya is considering.
Panya. Based on.
Panya that considers based on what has been heard.
Everything has to have been heard originally.
Yeah.
In some
way. Yes.
I didn't understand. Yoniso Manasikara is wise reflection, right? So how can it be possible to have Yoniso Manasikara without Panya? Because wisdom and Panya are the same.
The reason I made the comment that I did was because I understand that there's Yoniso Manasikara, wise consideration, with or without Panya. So that's why Chintamaya Panya, which involves Panya, at those moments there has to be Yoniso Manasikara, but there can be Yoniso Manasikara at any moments of Kusala. Whenever there is Kusala in the mind or process, there is Yoniso Manasikara.
Sometimes Yoniso Manasikara is referring to Chittasika, and sometimes to a...
Manasikara can have three meanings, but Yoniso Manasikara refers to the whole set of mind or cheetahs,
okay,
beginning with mind or averting consciousness and the javana cheetahs, not just to one cheetah.
Kusala sense process.
And also in Kusala sense or process, also Yoniso Manasikara. So Yoniso Manasikara can refer to just any wholesome sense or mind or process with or without Panya. So when there's Chintamaya Panya, there has to be Yoniso Manasikara, but not the other way around. On one tape, I think I heard you mentioning that because Sutamaya Panya and Chintamaya Panya are old terms that were used at the time, so it may not even, in some context, may not even refer to Panya, but by definition, I think it has to refer to Panya, but different kinds of
Panya. It has to be Panya because it is Sutamaya Panya, Chintamaya Panya, Bhavanamaya Panya.
But it could be Panya of different kinds or levels. It may be in, because it was the terms were used even before the Buddha, it may be referring to Panya that is not
common,
just common Panya. And so back to the question about the voice of another Paratogosa. So we could just say that how it fits in is that the voice is of another is the condition for Sutamaya Panya.
It is Sutamaya Panya.
It is Sutamaya Panya.
Thank you.
I just have a clarification on something that came up yesterday when we were talking about lobha conditioned by dosa, dosa as a condition for lobha. I think when this came up on the discussion list before, the context was slightly different than what we were discussing yesterday, because what was suggested before was that dosa was a precondition for lobha.
Could be, I think. Could be, was it? Could be. Do you have that?
I have it here.
I don't mind much because I think that anything can be conditioned, like Pakatu Panisya Pachiya.
I think the point was it's just there's a distinction between saying dosa may be a condition for lobha and dosa is a condition is a precondition for lobha. That was just the
point.
How about the question we had yesterday, we discussed, Venerable, about dosa? You were saying, is it a mini concept? Well, I mean anger, is it? You were saying, is it a mini concept? And we were saying, it's Paramattha Dharma. Is there any, you want to clarify more on that? Do you see that dosa is actually Paramattha Dharma?
Can the characteristic of dosa be concept?
Yes.
The characteristic?
Oh. Well, when we're talking about the characteristic, the actual
words are concept, but the actual characteristic is not concept.
Yes, right.
It just seemed that dosa could be broken down into various components: thinking, feeling, sensation, and so on. So it seemed to me that because of that it would be a concept, but I need to learn more, I think, to appreciate what's being said.
Yes, I think when there is anger and also attachment, it's quite possible that what we take for anger and the attachment are really a combination of things and not the actual characteristic of that particular Dhamma, and the feeling is mixed up in there with it.
This is the kind of question I'd only ask if no one's got anything else they want to bring up at this moment. Just at the end of yesterday, I think, we were just having a bit of a laugh and about the Buddha creating another form, and you were making the comment about, well, yes, can we all make a doll or something like this? Can we say at these times that it's because the jhana cittas condition, kama vatra cittas, that such functions are performed, such as the Dibbacakka Jnana, like a miracle? So it's the jhana cittas that condition, the kama vatra cittas that can perform these acts. Is this also the same with the recollection of past lives, 100,000 eons of past lives? Can one say the same way that the jhana cittas are conditioning the kama vatra cittas to perform that function?
In what life?
For example, in the Buddha's life or his disciples' lives.
You might have had or developed jhana and could perform miracle in what life, we don't know, but what about this life? Mm.
But obviously we can't in this life. Mm-hmm. But anyway, like the recollection of the past lives, is it the jhana cittas conditioning the kama vatra cittas too?
Yeah. When you said jhana cittas, but while in jhana there can be no recollection.
No, it cannot be while in jhana. Okay. So like the example we gave yesterday, or the Dibbacakka Jnana, it has to be kama vatra cittas that perform these functions, but only because they have been conditioned by jhana cittas.
Conditioned by jhana citta?
The kama vatra.
What kind?
What type of kama vatra citta? Kama vatra cittas with great wisdom.
Which can perform miracle.
So this is relatively clear for me in the case of these miracles, and in the case of the recollection of past lives, because clearly also it's conditioned by jhana cittas.
Like Sariputta's last life?
Yes. So jhana cittas again conditioning kama vatra cittas, which have arising of great wisdom that can penetrate or understand.
So you mean that the jhana citta can condition panya to understand reality right now?
Well, the panya which understands reality is being conditioned by past panya, and mm-hmm. so it's only because they are enlightened that there is this possibility. But I think, like in the case of the miracles, it's only because there are the jhana cittas have been attained as well. There are the abhinyas, because those who have become enlightened who haven't attained jhana cittas cannot perform such miracles or cannot recollect past lives and so on. Is this correct?
To clarify there, in recollecting past lives, is that a kama vatra citta that does that?
Only kama vatra, or what? Or everything? Every experience?
Well, when recollecting previous lifetime, when recollecting past lives.
With jhana?
Well, as an abhinya, as one of the abhinyas.
You mean with jhana or without jhana? It must be jhana.
Must be jhana, that's what I thought. Yeah. Yeah.
So while in jhana, the recollection happens? The recollection happens while in jhana?
If you haven't done jhana before in past life, can you do this life?
No. But the question is about abhinya. Mm-hmm.
Must be this life. You have jhana too.
Yeah.
With Ajahna can it arise.
But the actual moments when there is a recollection of past lives or the Abhinya occur is immediately after leaving the jhana, not during the actual jhana process, I think.
Without jhana, no conditions for any miracle at all.
Yes, but the actual recollection happens immediately after leaving the jhana, not mm-hmm. during, while in the jhana. I think that's Jonathan's point, is that right?
Yeah.
This is actually going in the opposite direction. When we hear about the Buddha being able to see the outcome of people's lives in the future, I'm a little bit confused about how that sits with the anatta.
With our conditions, can it be like that?
You're saying that for the
anything, present or future, depends on conditions.
That the Buddha's seeing into the future is by conditions.
Mm-hmm. Because of conditions now, there's certain results in the future.
Mm-hmm. Conditionality doesn't mean randomness.
Okay. I think that's probably what I was reading then.
But nor does it... Well, does it mean predetermined?
But there can be an understanding by the Buddha.
Who predetermined?
There's no predeterminer.
Conditions.
Okay. I guess it's not... I don't know how useful it is to try to figure this out intellectually, but it seems...
It must remember it's the conditions of a Buddha.
Yes, it's the conditions of a Buddha.
Way.
Okay.
To go back to the question, Sarah... The reason I raised this question yesterday was because talking about the necessity for there being a heart base in order for there to be consciousness. What I'm confused about is that this mind-made body, Manamaya Kaya, exists at the same time as the ordinary physical body. And so the ordinary physical body has a heart base. And what about this mind-made body that the Buddha had that was able, or that the people with Abhinya, some people with Abhinya have, that are able to travel vast distances or to be in two places at the same time or whatever? Does this mind-made body have its own heart base?
I would like to ask, what is heart base? If you don't know, then talk about just whatever mind-made is. What is heart base itself? What is it? What is Satayatu, or what is heart base? Yeah. Is it Rupa or Nama?
Yes. It's Rupa. Rupa.
Why do you call it heart base?
Mm-hmm. So because this started yesterday when I was talking about people who are clinically dead according to all the instruments. I mean, now that they have superb technology to monitor this, that the heart, the actual physical heart, has stopped and the brain is dead. And yet an hour later the person suddenly consciousness returns and can explain everything that took place during the operation, what was said, what instruments were used and so on. And that was when Sarah said, well, actually the heart base was still there, or the person was still alive or whatever, the heart base was still functioning even though the machines couldn't detect it. I think that's how we got involved in this yesterday. So I don't actually know, apart from this, what is meant by the heart base. Because I'm not aware that the Buddha gave any locality to consciousness.
Are you saying that because it is the base or where the cittas arise, if there is just a form with no cittas arising, for example, in the example of the mind-made body, the Manomaya,
there's Kaya.
If no citta arises, so then no heart base.
If no citta arises,
no need for
a heart base.
Heart base is conditioned by karma, not by citta.
Then what is the mind-made body?
Jasrupa.
Jasrupa.
So So no harm.
The no harm.
Just like a puppet.
Okay.
So no karma produced rupas in it at all.
Just chitta produced rupas.
Well, I think the answer is that it has been made. Are we talking of the Buddha making a replica?
Yes.
Well, that was made by chitta, I presume. Yeah. So that particular rupa was made by chitta.
But made by chitta, but there must have been chitta, must have been chittas there too, because otherwise, I mean, a doll cannot function and respond to situations. For example, with Angulimala, you know, to be able to answer questions, to be able to do this, that, and the other, or to be able
remotely.
Remotely, or to explain Abhidharma or whatever else.
Yeah.
See,
like
a ventriloquist.
It's Rupa. But somehow.
All the animation comes from the creator,
yeah.
Not in the Rupa.
Mm. Ajahn, what asks these questions, these ones, about this topic?
With Anjita or with Jitta?
Ajahn wants to know what Jitta is.
Can there be Jitta Sika with Anjita?
The level of interest in this topic.
Yeah.
The level of interest in this topic. Really.
I will say the usual chitters.
As a suspect.
But doesn't it always come back to one's own chitta? One can never know the others at any time. So it always comes, we can only ever know at any moment what our own motive or chitta seekers are.
Since we're talking about the future, the name of the future and past, and so I asked this in Kankajani about what do they mean by direct experience. People often ask us on the forum about direct experience, and they get very agitated when we say, well, actually, even during a moment of satipatthana, the wisdom and sati know the immediately falling away object, but this is still by direct experience. They say, well, it can't be direct experience because it's the immediately falling away object, but as I understand it, direct experience refers to insight different from just thinking about something. But they think of direct experience in a very, very concrete, literal formulation. Could you say something about direct experience, what it means?
What did you mean about it? Direct experience.
I think it's just insight. Insight different from just thinking about a topic.
What about satipatthana?
I would say it's, again, it's insight.
The beginning, satipatthana in the beginning, at the very beginning moment.
Insight into a characteristic of a reality.
Satipatthana is not always vipassana.
Yes, but it's still always insight.
Without satipatthana, can vipassana arise?
No. But whether vipassana or not, it's still insight into the characteristic of a reality, satipatthana. And the reality is always just falling away.
That is thinking about it.
Yes. Well, I'm describing.
Since now nothing arises and falls away, so there can be the understanding of that which appears now.
Okay, is that understanding direct experience? We call it direct experience.
This is not yesterday. Not tomorrow.
Okay, well, related to this question then, the Buddha, by direct experience, knows the future to some degree, it says, right? Why do we call that by direct experience?
It's not just thinking.
Right.
Or past lives.
Yeah. So that's what I'm getting at by the term direct experience. I don't know what the Pali term is for direct experience.
Robert. Could I ask Ajahn, I'm not sure if the answer came when you said, what is satipatthana in the very beginning? What is it in the very beginning?
Is the drink sweet?
Pardon?
Is the drink in the glass, the water in the glass now, sweet? Is this sweet?
Can be.
Just can be. But when it's the moment of tasting, it's not just can be.
Right.
So satipatthana is only one
moment, one jitta moment, and further, I guess, insight and thought.
No one can count at all.
Sorry?
No one can count how many moments.
You ask, is the drink sweet? And, you know, you can say it, the moment of tasting, one can know.
The tasting consciousness experiences the sweet.
Okay, the tasting consciousness experiences the sweet. That knowing, mm-hmm. is at a conceptual level.
What is conceptual at that very moment?
Actually, no, something happened that you know. That one
sweetness appear to the taste consciousness.
Okay. What's on the tip of my tongue is it's as simple as that.
Can you experience sweetness without a tongue consciousness?
No. So that's the beginning.
If you don't say anything, still,
I still know it's still sweet and I don't have to say anything. Somehow tasting seems easier than seeing.
If you taste that drink, you know whether it's sweet or not. Mm. You don't have to make any assumptions about it. But unless and until it's tasted, then and only then is it known directly. Mm. So that's the analogy for Maeve's question, which was?
What is the very, very beginning of Satipatthana? Mm.
In other words, what is the difference between a moment of Satipatthana and thinking of a concept?
Yes.
So that was the analogy.
Yes, that's right.
That is knowing the sweetness from tasting, as opposed to knowing it's sweet,
as
because it's
to talking about it.
We know that drink, it's a sweet one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Why do you say tasting seems easier than seeing?
Go ahead and answer.
No, if you taste it, because it tastes your tongue. But then you see the distance. Is that what you...
Well, something like that, yes.
That's what I said, physical touch. Like touching your body. But seeing is some distance. Still you can see.
Is it really some distance?
But at the moment of seeing, there's no understanding about whether it's far or near.
Right.
Touch or not touch. Because it's moment of experiences and object. And that which experience is the same as that which experienced other doorway as well.
What does tasting consciousness know? What can it know?
Well, sweet or sour or salty.
But isn't that concept, like visible object knowing color?
Well, visible object does know color.
Well,
red, blue, yellow. Can you say anything that would be helpful?
Do you have to say what the taste is when the tasting consciousness arrives?
No.
But it's there.
Yes. No, for some reason that one's...
easy to know?
It's seeming easier to know, but I suspect it probably isn't.
As you don't have to say what is there, it's like now, this moment of seeing. You don't have to say what is here.
Right.
Exactly the same.
Right. Why is it that knowing seeing an invisible object is so difficult?
And what about hearing? Not difficult?
No, it's very difficult too. And touch.
Taste and smell are being experienced all the time, aren't they? Even now. Even though we don't particularly notice them. They must be happening just as much as seeing and hearing.
What about now?
Yes, even now.
Now that it's seeing, thinking.
Yes.
Is there any tasting?
Well, I think there is. Because, well, take an example of someone who puts on perfume. When they first put it on, they can smell it. But after a while, they get used to it. And try as they might, they can't smell it. Does that mean there's no smelling happening in ultimate reality? It does.
Does anyone smell something? No.
Occasionally a smell will come, but not all the time.
Is seeing more frequent than smelling? That is the question.
I think Ajahn's answer was yes.
Do we have to ask anyone? Because now there is seeing, no one can deny.
When we say that we see nothing and we smell nothing, as well as we see something and we smell something.
Odor is something that requires impingement on the nose.
Eyesight requires impingement.
No, it doesn't. No, it's different. No,
it's a further away object. Yeah. An odor actually has to touch the base, but visible object doesn't touch the base. If it touched the base, you wouldn't see. Visible object doesn't touch the prasada rupa.
Does light not touch the prasada rupa?
This is what I've read in the Vasuddhimagga. If the visible object touched prasada rupa, you wouldn't see it because it's actually touching the prasada rupa. It's the same with hearing. It's a far away object that somehow impinges. It's different to odour, taste and tactile. Mm. I'd like to bring up something we discussed about Sotapanna. I have a little bit of doubt about something Ivan said, and it was when the Sotapatti Magajita, there are no more conditions for killing, stealing, of the five precepts. There's no more conditions for the five precepts to be broken. Now, I'm not sure what those conditions are, and Ivan brought up the fact that because there's no more wrong view, Sotapanna does not take anything as stealable or any being as killable, because there is, in reality, there is no being. But somehow that didn't seem right to me. And I know I don't have another explanation, however, the conditions for not breaking the precepts are what?
No self. An understanding there's no self.
And that's it.
That's it.
That's why, okay.
Jan, the other day your answer was just not such strong kilesa anymore, the gross kilesa being eradicated. Can we put it like this? Can we say the more the understanding of anatta grows, the more the kilesa are worn away? So at the point of Sotapanna, because of the development of understanding of realities as they are, the gross kilesa which would lead to such acts, that is eradicated, just like that. So nothing else to say, I think.
Okay, well, that's what I heard.
Yeah. I think there's got to be a reason why they're eradicated.
Mm. Well, we know that the kilesa can only be eradicated by the one who has developed vipassana, who has understood realities for what they are, because in the development of samatha, the kilesa are only ever suppressed. So it's the development of vipassana that leads to the eradication of kilesa, so that the gross defilements no longer arise. So it all comes back to the development of insight and kilesa at different levels being eradicated. I think that's all there is to say about it.
Jonathan was bringing up the fact that one has an idea of things belonging to oneself in some way. One knows that it's your cup or someone else's cup. So I thought that might be something we could venture into. Because I don't think Sotapanna has the idea of mine.
What I think that the Sotapanna knows, the robes that are his belong to him and the robes of his brethren belong to them, so he wouldn't get up in the morning and put on someone else's robes because he can distinguish. He has the concept of what is appropriate to one person and to another, quite apart from the issue of sila. And I'm not talking about sila, let's say that everything is communally owned, so it's not an issue of sila, but he knows which is his bed and which is someone else's bed space, so he wouldn't go and sleep in someone else's bed. He'd be able to not because he doesn't take them for self, but because he observes the conventions in this regard.
The Buddha still has his own kuti that he goes to in Jetavana, not anyone else's.
But without becoming a Sotapanna, anybody do that like that too? Mm. Not lying on the other's way?
Right.
So the same.
But the Sotapanna has, I think we say, has no wrong view.
Mm-hmm. The Sotapanna doesn't take it to be this. But there's accumulations to know that it's
the cause of Panya, less of the Kilesa.
We always read in the text that if there wasn't the Dharma, the unconditioned Dharma, i.e. Nibbana, the unborn, the uncreated, etc., there wouldn't be an escape from that which is conditioned. My question
because
is why?
Whatever appears is the object of attachment. Mm-hmm. Only that which does not arise and does not appear cannot be the object of attachment. Mm.
So why, in order to eradicate attachment, does there have to be that which cannot be the object of attachment?
So attachment cannot arise. Because of that object.
I see. So because there has to be the object that there cannot be attachment to. Okay. And Lokutra Chitas there cannot be attachment to, but their object is... Mm-hmm. It cannot be Lokutra Chitas without the object of the unconditioned. Okay. So the reason why there has to be the unconditioned, etc., is because there has to be an object which... cannot be the object of attachment. Okay. And the second silly question is...
That was a great question.
Okay,
it's
thank
really
you.
Made something very clear for me.
The other question is about Nibbana and Parinibbana. So we always read about how there are these two kinds of Nibbana and so on, and there's the Nibbana with the khandhas still intact, and then there is Parinibbana, the end of the khandhas. Now, it actually seems to me as though we're talking about two things that really have almost nothing in common, because when we're referring to Nibbana as the unconditioned element, which is the object of cittas without attachment, we're talking about a reality. But when we're talking about Parinibbana, we're not talking about any reality at all. We're just talking about the cessation, the final ending of realities. So it seems that when it refers to two kinds of Nibbana, it seems that there's nothing in common.
Apparently it's not our language. So people in the old days understand the term of Nirodha or Nibbana. But for us it seems very mystery because no one can understand it perfectly because one do not understand how they are used like people in those days. But if we know that, is Nibbana a reality?
Yes.
So it is the object of Lokutra Citta.
Yes.
And another meaning of that is that when the kilesa is completely eradicated,
yes,
since it cannot arise again, it is what they used to say, Nibbana too, in the old days.
Yes. Okay, so we could say that what is in common is they're both referring to the eradication of kilesa.
But the Paramattha Dhamma of Nibbana, one of the four, is the object.
Yes. But if we say that both meanings of Nibbana and Parinibbana are referring to when what is in common is when Kalesa completely eradicated, but for example, at the moment of the attaining of arahatship, the Kalesa are completely eradicated, so one can't say that parinibbana refers to the final eradication of kalesa, because they've already been eradicated. All one can say it is the final cessation of the khandhas.
Cessation of khandhas, so they're tied together.
That's yep. By the way of cessation, yes. Is the word in common.
In the suttas, parinibbana can refer either to the extinction of the kilesas or to final nibbana.
Yes,
so,
that's true.
So the commentators add the words kilesa and khanda to it.
That's true.
So then what is the difference between nibbana, where the kilesas are ended, and parinibbana of the kilesas?
Well, that is the same thing.
It's the same
thing. Yes.
So we're just having extra vocabulary.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yes.
What about the two terms, sa upati se sa nibbana?
That's all, yes.
Same. Pukala, yeah. And sa upati se sa nibbana. Sa upati se sa pukala is not the arhata, because there is some upadana. So it is sa upati se sa nibbana for those who are not arhata. But when it is sa upati se sa nibbana, it means that the arahata, which is still alive, because of five khandhas, haven't ceased to arise yet.
Yes, this is the one where it's referring to the two kinds of nibbana that's referred to. But that's a good point, the two kinds of parinibbana is referred to.
Maybe we could hear something about the present moment, Ajahn.
Their experience?
Yes. Okay. Can you talk about it?
Can it be awareness or just ordinary experience?
Has to be direct awareness.
Experience and object, direct experience, and with right understanding and awareness. Are they all the same?
Ordinary experience is just thinking.
Can it be seen?
But usually we know it just by thinking.
If seeing, experience.
That's a reality. Seeing is a reality.
So seeing experiences an object right now.
Mm-hmm.
Directly.
Directly. Mm-hmm.
Not in a dream. And direct awareness is not just direct experience. Because awareness is aware of a reality which is experienced.
You seem to be distinguishing awareness, aware of an object that is directly experienced, mm-hmm. as distinct from direct experience of an object.
Without awareness.
And is it direct experience of an object without awareness that occurs on and on throughout the day, of which we are not aware? Mm-hmm. And that is the beginning, that is seeing.
So when we talk more about the direct experience now, it can condition right understanding and right awareness when time comes. Otherwise we'll keep on thinking, just thinking about realities. For example, when we talk about seeing, we think about seeing. But there can be conditions for being aware of the object of seeing, or the seeing itself right now, one day, or now, depending on conditions. And one knows that that is what Buddha taught, that is what he experienced, that is what he enlightened. So we can see that many moments pass without understanding.
Mm. Many.
Mm-hmm.
What should we do?
No, we cannot do anything. To know that it passed without understanding can condition direct awareness. To do or to understand?
To understand.
Mm-hmm. If there is the idea of to do, that is wrong.
I'm sorry, you just said to do. To do what with the idea of jitta? Is wrong.
No understanding about conditions at all. No understanding about anathemas. Why do? There is seeing. No one can do anything.
Right. I was going to say, why do what? There's nothing to do. Try. Right.
And actually, what are you going to do?
And this is the only way to eliminate attachment to the result, to gain more knowledge, to get something for oneself. Just live, but with more and more understanding.
Just live, did you say?
Live, live, live. Mm-hmm. One has to live. Citta arises by conditions. Mm-hmm. You cannot stop the arising of citta from this moment to other moment.
Can you say a little bit more about what are the conditions for that understanding apart from occasions like this when we come, but of course these are few and far between, and the rest of the time, what are the conditions?
Without these moments as conditions, you cannot have what you want or think that you can do other thing in order to have it.
So just to remember that there's nothing to be done.
Reality is, well, it's that way. No one. Sankara Khanda.
I think sometimes the obstacle to the arising of awareness is thinking that there is something to be done, but other times the obstacle is just that there's no remembering or there's
not enough panya.
But you've been telling me not enough panya for years.
What about the Himalayan range? Mm. How long to be right. Like that?
Right.
A year or a life or more than that? Mm-hmm. And in order to eradicate anusya and all defilements which has been accumulated longer than that, much longer than that.
So I think the understanding about the anusya is very helpful because we can see how strong they must be, because kilesa keep manifesting all the time and we just get an idea of how much there must be accumulated there. Thinking I know, but...
Jonathan, it would seem though that it is also a hindrance to think that awareness cannot arise or will take, it is like too long for it to arise now. Mm-hmm. Because we hear that really anything is possible by conditions. Mm-hmm. So there's a way of thinking about like how long it takes, which can actually be a hindrance rather than a...
If you get discouraged.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. I like Ajahn's comment a little while ago that she often says, but again it's only just when click, when time comes.
Ajahn, a sotapanna doesn't take lopa or dosa or mana for self. They be aware that it's just a reality that arises and falls away. What about other realities? Do they understand them conceptually that they just fall away?
Vipassana panya penetrate the arising and falling away.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone with the panya of that degree.
Right. So they not necessarily have satipatthana all the time, but they do have an understanding that these realities do fall away, right?
It's only thinking when it's right. Not satipatthana.
Right. At the thinking level, that's what I mean.
So the panya doesn't have only thinking level.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. So they would understand that visible object falls away, so they don't cling to visible object as being something that can be theirs.
If it's not like that, that person is not a sotapanna. If there is no direct awareness, no direct understanding, no penetration of the noble truth, that person cannot be a sotapanna.
Venerable Dhammananda, I know that you mentioned last time that you're studying the Abhidhamma Buddha. Abhidhamata Sangaha. And I think you mentioned you were studying with under a nun, is that right? Or?
Well, we have a different teacher every year. So okay. This year it's Ajahn Salisa. She's a lay woman.
A lay woman. And when you study the Abhidhamma, is there any difference in the understanding of the practice? Or are you just studying the Abhidhamma as theory?
We were just studying the texts and the commentaries to them.
Can it be studying Abhidhamma without understanding Dhamma now as Abhidhamma?
Well, it wouldn't be very useful. It wouldn't be so useful.
to remember the names, the numbers, so what?
Well, yes, we're doing that, but I'm not sure I understood your question.
If a person studies Abhidhamma without understanding that this moment is Abhidhamma, is it the study of Abhidhamma?
Well, yes, it is, but...
Not just names?
But
not just names, different names and different numbers?
No, I'm not sure what you mean by
that. Like a map? Like a map, reading a map.
Right.
But Abhidhamma is not far away from here and now. Seeing is, hearing is, thinking is. Every moment is Abhidhamma, citta, cetasika, and rupa. So we don't have to go away and find Abhidhamma elsewhere. But whenever there is the term Dhamma, and there is the understanding that what is now is conditioned, arising, that is the meaning of Dhamma, that is a reality. And there are many, many characteristics of Dhamma. Some cannot experience anything. We don't have to call that rupa. But it's characteristic that it cannot experience, like hardness. Its characteristic is hard. When it appears to the body consciousness, it's real. We don't have to name or call it anything. But it's a kind of reality because it can be experienced. So that characteristic, no matter if we call it rupa or anything or hardness, is there. And is that Abhidhamma? The direct one.
I think that's because of the kalesa, we're always with our study or interest or consideration always being taken away from present reality. It's like the attachment just won't let go, so it's always taking us away from what appears now.